Accession number 28358, Reel 4.
Mrs. Jill McNair, Reel 4. So did you have to pay for that yourself?
Well, we were given a £100 uniform allowance, but I...
To cover all these different
Yes,
things.
And it didn't really, because I had my... I thought, well, if I'm going to be in, I have my uniform tailored properly. And we had various reps from the tailors at the depot, and I went to Simpson's, and they made a very good job of it. And I must say, my uniform lasted for 10 years, the number one dress. The others you had to renew and pay for yourself. So mine came to over £100, but it was worth it. And the other thing I forgot to mention, we had a very heavy quality grey greatcoat of Crombie material. They were very heavy, but I was very glad of that when we were in Japan, when it was so cold, to wear over the uniform.
So after this initial training, did they, the military side of it, did you then go to the more medical QA training?
We may have had some training in first aid from a military point of view, but that 4 weeks training was basically military, orientating ourselves into the ways of the army, really, and the duties that we would have to perform, like orderly officer later when we got to our units, and what was expected of us with the other ranks, how we behaved, and how we behaved ourselves all together, and really there was little sort of fraternising between. I mean, this was sort of drummed into us a bit.
What was it drummed into you?
That we should not, I didn't like to use the word fraternise, but with the other ranks, but that, you know, there was a difference between the two. I don't like that, but it was drummed into us at that time.
Yes, and do you think that was necessary or important, that you had to maintain a difference between other ranks?
I think it was, particularly when you're in charge of a ward, or later on, as I was, much later in my career, in charge of a school of nursing and dealing with other ranks who could be very good or sometimes a bit bolshy. And you had to, really, although you also had to bring yourself down to their level and understand their problems. I thought that was very important too. From Liphook, I was posted to the Cambridge Military Hospital, which was one of the largest, it's the largest military hospital in the Southern Command, with 500 beds, various, dealing with medical and surgical patients, emergencies, theatre cases, and all illnesses and diseases, apart from those that needed really good specialist care, and then specialists were brought in from outside hospitals, or they were sent to civilian hospitals. So the patients were really well looked after. It was a huge hospital, built about 18-something in Aldershot, and a very busy hospital, and divided into a medical division and a surgical division, with the officers' ward in the middle. I should think about 20 or so QA nursing sisters there. The matron was Lieutenant Colonel Esther Somerville, ARRC, and the deputy matron, Major Agnes McGeary, and she was of Chindit fame. She served in Burma during the war, and she was the only lady member of the Chindit Society. And both my matrons are very good, but tough, and the discipline was hard, but from them I learnt so much, which stood me in great good stead when I was out in Korea. At first, when we arrived, it was just before Christmas, and the matrons, we met them in the corridor, and they rather floored us. They said, right, three of us went there. I think you're all going on Christmas leave. We were straight away, which is marvellous. I hadn't had Christmas at home for ages. And then we returned to the hospital in time for New Year and settled down on the wards. I was a junior sister at first, working under a senior sister. The wards had about 30 beds, and they range from orthopaedic wards to medical wards, various surgical wards, and very busy all the time. We had two operating theatres which were ongoing most of the time there.
Who were the patients?
The patients were all soldiers, military patients, yes. No civilian patients at all.
And were they sort of remnants from World War II? Or were you getting Korean War people in?
This is where it's really interesting, because we were getting casualties from Korea. The war in Korea had broken out in June 1950. And by the time I got to the Cambridge, we were having some of the cases transferred to us. I remember one or two in legs and plasters in the orthopaedic ward and that. And so I actually became involved with it very early on, quite accidentally. And I remember too, later on, it was a very sad case. We had an I unit, and there was a young officer in this I unit when I was on night duty. At that time, I think I was in charge of the hospital, and I used to have to go around all the wards, and I went to the I ward, and his sister was all right, and spoke to this patient, and he was gradually going blind. He was a young man in his early 20s, whose retinas had become detached through blast, and there was nothing that could be done about it, and it was very sad. And that was a direct result of the Korean War, and that was early on. That must have been 1950-51 when I was...
And the blast had caused it.
Yes, it must have been the blast that had caused it. So he was very patient, lad, but that was very sad. That was really my first encounter, apart from some of the patients coming back with broken legs and various things like that. So I did sort of start almost with the Korean War there. And I stayed at the Cambridge Military Hospital from 1950 to January 1952, and had a lot of good experience there. We had our own nurses training school there, which I wasn't involved with, and they were training the QA nurses and the REMC nursing orderlies, because the wards were staffed. Usually on a ward you had one QA nursing sister and possibly a senior nursing REMC nursing orderly, possibly a sergeant or somebody, and several orderlies to run a ward. And if the sister was off, you'd have a relief sister helping her. You would be in charge of your own. Once you were given charge of ward, you'd have the ward for several months, 3 or 4 months, before it was your turn to go on night duty. And even longer sometimes. I was in charge of a surgical orthopaedic ward for a long time when I was at the Cambridge, towards the end of my time there. On night duty, there were the sister in charge of each division, medical and surgical, with an overall sister in charge, a night superintendent. I did this duty later on, and it was fairly onerous because, A, you were in charge of the whole hospital, which is up to 500 beds. We often had about 400 patients of various categories. Apart from that, you had to look after the junior and senior officers' wards, yourself and nurses, patients. You'd have one orderly on there. You did 3 rounds of the hospital, going right round, which is a large acreage to cover. In fact, I used to take a shortcut across the roof, and I was also afraid of meeting the grey lady, because every military hospital has its ghost, and that was the grey lady, but I didn't. that was quite time consuming, and you were responsible for writing a long 24-hour report for the hospital, all the wards. You listed all the wards, and the patients you wrote the report on were DILs, SIL, dangerously ill patients, seriously ill patients, admissions, anybody ill, anybody you were concerned about, people for operation the next day, people who were ill, and at the same time you had to list their name, rank, number, diagnosis, prognosis. It was and this was all in a large bound A4 book, and it used to take about 4 or 5 pages A4 handwritten at night, and this you had to present after you'd finished your duty on the morning about 8:30. You go up to Matron's flat and sit in her flat while she read this. And it was a responsibility, but sort of survived. So that was night duty.
But this hospital, it was called the Cambridge.
Yeah, Cambridge.
Was it in Cambridge?
No, it was in Aldershot. I think, I have a feeling that one of the Dukes of Cambridge had probably founded it. I'm not sure it's over there, actually. But so.
Did you ever, at this time, come across dealing with venereal disease in the troops?
I didn't personally. We used to have a VD ward, usually in each hospital, and this was managed by usually a staff sergeant in the RAMC. I didn't in all my career come across it, although, I mean, I knew it was there, but it was managed by somebody else.
Yeah,
I can't honestly remember if we had one at the Cambridge. What we did have at the Cambridge and all military hospitals was a detention ward, which is like a jail. And there's one in the Cambridge hospital. I was a bit shaken when I came across this for the first time. And particularly in Japan, we had our in-detention ward, which I looked after several times on night duty. And the patients were under arrest or being charged for something, some creating some misdemeanour in the army, and they were under lock and key, and you had to look after
them. That happened in Japan as well.
Yes. I think every military hospital probably had its own detention ward.
It's an interesting sort of insight into the army, isn't it?
Yes.
The VD ward and the detention ward. As well.
Yes,
you were certainly getting, it would seem, a very good experience.
It was, yes. And sort of, all the time the training was going on, practically on the wards. I mean, you went on training nurses on the wards. You know, suppose they're practical training. Although there would have been a tutor in the school doing that sort of academic training as well, which at that time I had nothing to do with. With military duties, we took our turn as orderly officer about once a month, and this entailed, once you're off duty off your nursing duties, you're on duty for 24 hours, and you were in. You had to look after the mess, make sure it was locked up, I think it's 11 o'clock at night. And if there were any emergency occurred, you would have to answer the phone and be responsible and sort it out. The only time I really had to deal with something was when I was at the Royal Victoria Hospital, Netley, many years later. And one of the QA sisters was taken ill, and the matron asked me to escort her to hospital in, I think, in Aldershot from Southampton, and I took her by ambulance. I think that was one of the, and another time in Japan, we still did orderly officer in Japan, which is quite a different kettle of fish because it was a huge mess there. And my most difficult problem was that the ladies' loo became blocked in the anteroom. And I had to get a Japanese plumber to sort it out, and I couldn't speak Japanese, nor could he speak English. We had a job, and that was another problem. And in London, when I was at Millbank, as orderly officer, and I used to have to go through, pass the Tate Gallery to Dolphin Square, where we had an apartment for the QA nurses to live, and check that they were in bed, and they were all right at night. And I had an escort then, RNC escort.
How about your social life? Did you go to the men's mess?
Yes.
Were you able to?
We at the Cambridge we had quite a social life. We were invited to a lot of parties at the various messes, and the QAs also were very sociable. And we used to have to give cocktail parties in the mess, For the RMC mess, we sort of mix quite a lot. Used to go to several dances, very nice dances in evening dress in various places. We had an obligatory mess dinner every so often in the mess, and that was always a bit of, we had to dress in our number one dress and sit through the dinner. Sometimes there were guests, but otherwise it was just the QAs, and we had to pass the port at the end of the dinner. This is quite a a thing. You had to pass a decanter around without letting it touch the table. There's some superstition about that. And also, the junior QA officer acted as Madam Vice and had to, also say dinner was announced, and also with a loyal toast. She did, I can't remember, something to do with the loyal toast. She had a loyal toast. It was a very, just like an ordinary military dinner. Had these fairly
really
often.
Were in the army.
Oh yes, they? Yes, very yes. much so. And I had to take a small church parade in Aldershot when I hadn't been there very long, and I was told to do this. And I was terrified that I'd forget the commands. Unfortunately, it started bucketing with rain, and so I marched these girls through this long corridor down to the hospital chapel rather than doing it outside, making a Charlie of myself.
So at that time, would you have been a regular QA, or did that come
no,
a bit later?
I was given started with a short service commission of 4 years. That was the shortest time you could serve. And then after I'd been there about 6 months or so, Major McGarry caught me in the treatment room in my ward one day, and she said, "Have you considered becoming a regular? Would you take a regular commission?" And I thought about it, and I thought, well, it made sense. And this was quite a prolonged business. It took several months, involving about three interviews. One was with the ADNS, who was still Colonel Johnson at the time at Southern Command, and this involved a mess dinner. And at the mess dinners, the most important guest, all the matrons, sat in the middle of the table. And Colonel Johnson was sitting in the middle of this long table with beautiful regimental silver and everything else in the dining room. And I was placed opposite her. And this was one interview. And see how I behaved, I think, at a mess dinner. I think there was another which I can't remember. And then I had to go up to the War Office. And our part of the War Office then was at Lansdowne House, in number one dress, to be interviewed by a board of about nine. Yeah. And I got there. There was an RAF guardsman guarding the building, and he saluted me. And because of my grey-blue uniform, he said, "Good afternoon, Mum. How do you like being in the Air Force?" So that started off quite well. Then I went up in this rickety old building, and I saw a lot of ladies. And I thought there were secretaries moving around, so I said hello to them. They said, "Sit down." So I sat down. And eventually they called me into this large room. And sitting at this oval table were all these ladies, plus the matron-in-chief, etc., about nine of them. And I thought, God, I put my foot in it, because I thought they were secretaries, because they wear civilian dress, and I'd forgotten that at the War Office. I do it at the MOD now. And so I was questioned for about half an hour or so, all sorts of questions, professional and military, and also what would you do if you were stuck on a desert island, how would you amuse yourself? And so I said I would embroider and read, etc. Anyway, that was that. And I heard several weeks later I'd been accepted for a regular commission, and it was announced in the London Gazette later that year. And then I knew, having been accepted, I could not leave the QAs for 10 years. Unless I was, the only way you could leave was by marriage, because on marriage you had to leave, or if you disgraced yourself, or through illness. so I knew I was in for. That's what a lot of my colleagues, why they didn't want to become regulars, because they were bound for so many years. But I never regretted the decision. So.
It's a long time, isn't it, for a young woman?
Yes, it is. I was 23 when I joined. I suppose I was about 24 then, you see. Yes, just 24. And it's a big decision to make at that time.
Yes, yes. Particularly, I suppose, if you had a fiancé or...
Yes, that's right, yes.
Presumably, yes. You would have to give up if you were...
You would have to leave, yes. 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 There was one or two of... my friends or colleagues did get married while I was at, went to their weddings when I was in Aldershot, and one married 9 years and something a few days before her 10 years are up, so she lost all her gratuity and everything. I mean, she didn't mind, she was getting married to somebody and he was in the Air Force and she had to move, but it was, the rules were rules, and you just stuck by them and accepted them. It was no good kicking against it.
This is the end of Reel 4. This is Jill McNair.